Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt. This is another episode of Beyond the Mekong, broadcast by The Diplomat. And with me today is Jerry Flynn. Jerry is a very well-known journalist in Cambodia and beyond, and is quite well-known for his environmental reporting. Now, Jerry attempted to leave and come back into Cambodia a few weeks ago, but he's been denied entry, and he's going to bring us up to date on what happened. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Luke. Kind of wish I wasn't here in terms of my current situation, but it is what it is.
It's been a very difficult time on many fronts in Cambodia over the past month to 6 weeks. In your particular case, take us back and tell us exactly what happened.
Yeah, on January 2nd, I was taking my wife to go and see Mudeng, the baby pygmy hippo in Thailand, and we flew out from Siem Reap International Airport, and on the way out of Cambodia, immigration stopped me. You know, at first they were saying it was a problem with the machine printing the exit sticker incorrectly for some reason. But then about 45 minutes of this back and forth, you know, no real explanation of what's going on, an immigration official took me aside and said that one of the documents in my last visa application was fake or incorrect. Eventually, they did let me on the plane. They didn't tell me at that point that I would not be allowed back into Cambodia. So we went, we had a holiday. We came back on January 5th, checked in with the airline at the airport in Bangkok. Mm-hmm. No issues there, so, you know, sort of thinking everything's fine. Then, yeah, as soon as we landed in Siem Reap, you know, the exact same thing starts happening at the immigration desk. Only this time, you know, it was much quicker. They were very quick to just sort of say, like, no, you've been denied entry. We're trying to ask them why. They were saying that I had lied on a visa application, which I hadn't. Then they told me, you know, they showed me a screenshot of, like, the immigration system. Had a photo of me and sort of a note written in Khmer, which they told me said that I've been blacklisted since November 25th, 2024. So it seems like they've just been waiting for me to leave the country until they could get rid of me.
What happened next?
Well, they pretty much frog-marched me onto a plane. Mm. Yeah, a look of disappointment when, you know, everyone else on the plane has been sat on the tarmac ready to go, and then I get walked on by immigration officials, which, you know, didn't look great. But,
sure.
Yeah, in Bangkok ever since, trying to figure out exactly what's going on. I've been working with the British Embassy in Phnom Penh. They've been very helpful in just trying to clarify the facts and my actual immigration status. And, yeah, since then, the embassy got a note from the immigration department saying that I'd applied for a visa to work in Cambodia as an electrician, which is, you know, just bizarre. I'm not very handy, get me.
It's kind of absurd. I mean, I understand, you know, as a journalist, having worked around the region for perhaps too long, often you might write travel editor, writer, journalists. I understand that sometimes, particularly when people are new to Cambodia, they're a bit wary about what do I tell them what I'm doing, particularly if you haven't worked as a journalist before and if you're not known. But the idea of marking yourself down as an electrician, and that's what they are claiming, it seems kind of absurd.
Yeah, I've got no idea where they've plucked electrician from, because I mean,
right.
I've got a degree in literature and a degree in international relations. I'm, you know, you wouldn't want me rewiring your house. So yeah, that was you know, the first sort of indication for me that this was just you know, a cover story to cover getting rid of me.
But,
you know, and since then we've kind of worked. We're working with the embassy to try and just find out what's going on.
Right.
And so we kind of kept things quiet just while that was while those sort of negotiations were ongoing until, you know, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago now.
Okay.
We got confirmation from the embassy that the immigration department had told them they would no longer be taking any questions on my case. You know, they didn't even confirm that I was banned or blacklisted. All they said was that they denied entry to me because I had a visa to work as an electrician.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where everything up until we decided to go public with the news and make sure that this goes on the record to show what's happening in Cambodia.
Now, when you came back into Cambodia, you had your work visa was up to date, your work permit was up to date, and as I understand it, press pass, which I think they're overrated in Cambodia, but nevertheless, your press pass had expired and had been put in for renewal. So all your paperwork was up to date and had not been rejected previously, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The visa was valid for February 6, 2024 to February 15, 2025. Work permit, press pass, you know, I've always made sure that the paperwork is up to date because, you know, well, you're working as a journalist in Cambodia, you don't want to give them any excuses.
Yeah, know? That's right. That's exactly right. So you're told that you've been put on a blacklist, but they've issued you the visas afterwards anyway. Is that right, or have I got it mixed up?
Not quite. I mean, so the visa was issued in February 2024.
Right, okay.
It was a year-long multiple entry business visa. But, I mean, I've travelled on that visa several times. I think the last one before was in October.
Yep.
So, again, you know, this is what my visa agent, who, you know, handled the application process, told me. If a document had been submitted incorrectly, then the visa wouldn't have been issued. The Ministry of Labour wouldn't issue the work permits, and the Ministry of Information wouldn't issue me a press pass if they didn't think I was a working journalist.
Right.
None of it adds up.
Well, that's where one wonders. I have my doubts about a blacklist, even if they use those words. Certainly a shit list. A blacklist kind of implies there's a list of people who are banned, and at the moment, as far as I know, you're the only one. But leaving that aside for a second, it sounds a little bit more like, as things do happen in Cambodia, that perhaps there is another hand of fate in there deciding whether or not you should be allowed back into the country, and it kind of came sideways through the bureaucracy from somewhere.
If you look at the timing of events, the fact that I was put on this blacklist and banned from November 25th, yeah, that's just 3 days after I was featured in a France 24 documentary where I was with a France 24 journalist out in the Tarmon Mountains in western Cambodia, looking at the efficacy of Red Plus projects out there where they're trying to generate carbon credits from the rainforest. And so that documentary aired on November 22nd, November 23rd, to environmental activists, fairly prominent Cambodian activists that were also featured in the France 24 documentary as sources like me. They were both arrested on November 23rd, and then they were released on November 25th on the condition that they stop working with foreign journalists.
Right, and so,
you know, there aren't many foreign journalists reporting on environmental issues in Cambodia, so it felt that was a little bit targeted,
right,
for me, to be honest.
Sure, let's go back one second, though. There aren't that many journalists working in Cambodia anymore anyway. The numbers, you well know, as just quickly pointing out that Jerry's also president of the Overseas Press Club of Cambodia. But just to clarify, so the two journalists who were released after 2 days in prison, they got out on November 25, which is the same day that immigration said you were placed on this blacklist.
Correct, that is the timeline of events, and the fact that they were released, you know, on the condition that they don't work with foreign journalists anymore,
right.
Again, fits pretty pointed. And that documentary, after it came out, the Ministry of Environment issued a statement claiming that the documentary used old footage and was deliberately trying to mislead the public. Wildlife Alliance, the conservation NGO that runs the Red Plus project with the ministry, they also issued a statement very similarly worded. You know, neither of neither of these statements, either from the government or from the NGO, actually had any evidence to support their claims. They're just issuing vaguely worded denials, but, you know, not on specific points and not with any counterpoints or factual basis of their own.
Going back to the documentary, this was a France 24 production, and to use an industry term, you were essentially a piece of talent on the program. You weren't part of the production crew. You didn't edit or produce this documentary. You were just being interviewed as part of the show. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. I had no editorial control beyond the words that came out of my mouth.
So effectively, they're holding you responsible for a program that you just appeared in, which is, again, that's it seems like one hell of a stretch to ban a journalist from entering a country simply because he did his job by appearing on the television.
Yeah, it definitely, it's an extreme response, and so far the lack of believable explanation or evidence from the government in regards to like their cover story just really makes it seem like it is just a backlash from some of my journalistic work.
Right. It's put not yourself, but the government has put what's left of the Foreign Correspondent Corps in Cambodia in a difficult position. Now, as you mentioned earlier, this had happened a few weeks ago, and I had wind that you were going public with this. So I contacted the government through my sources, and I did say to them, look, we've heard this has happened, and I am obliged to write a story, obviously. Now, I want the government's input. I want you to tell me what happened. And through my sources, I gained access to a contact who I'll keep nameless at the moment. But I sent notes to this person via WhatsApp on Sunday night, and you went public with the story on the Monday, and I'm hoping for a few quotes from the government, their side of the story. I didn't hear anything back until Wednesday, and when they got back to me, they said, thank you, we're looking into this, which is kind of, this government gets very upset when people criticise them. They also get upset arguing that their side of the story is rarely told, but their communication skills are somewhat lacking.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that in the coverage that's come out since.
Mm-hmm.
I saw I believe it was the deputy director of the immigration department told Tomato May's English version that I'd applied for a visa as a teacher.
Right.
So they're not even being able to get the cover story straight. There's no coherent narrative. And I think you're right. The government often decry journalists that they feel are telling a different narrative to the government's version. But then you send requests for comment, questions, interview invitations out to the government, and they very, very rarely respond. You know, it doesn't matter if you do that in English or in Khmer, they're very reluctant to actually share information, and then they get upset when you go and publish.
Well, this is a big issue. I mean, there was the head of the National Police, I think it was, who was asked, in regards to your case, is there a blacklist? And the response was, yes, of course there's a blacklist, and it's terrorists, criminals and spies. As a Western journalist, I decided to leave that alone. But you could take that and turn it into a meal of a headline, and which one are you, Jerry, a terrorist, a criminal or a spy? You know, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing sometimes.
Yeah, it feels like there's a lack of coordination on the messaging there. And, you know, I think that further adds credence to what I've been saying, that this is an attack on me for my journalism rather than any sort of genuine clerical error.
Right. Now, on your journalism, it's interesting the way it's changed since the crackdown was initiated with the closure of the Cambodia Daily about 8 years ago. There were many NGOs, particularly Global Witness was one, who were doing the type of work that you have been doing in recent years. They left. That created a vacuum, and journalists like yourself stepped into that vacuum and have been doing a hell of a job reporting on the environment, which is probably, depending on where you stand, I guess, but I think the environment would be one or two or three in terms of ranking stories globally. How difficult has it been to do that long form of reporting in the absence of those NGOs who in previous years would have been there to back you?
It's definitely been difficult. I mean, we're very lucky that those NGOs did the work that they did at the time they did it. That gave us, you know, sort of a really good base coat to kind of work from, and a, you know, solid body of evidence to draw from in terms of past experiences. But yeah, I mean, the situation has definitely grown a lot more challenging. Cambodians are aware of how sensitive environmental issues are with the government. Yeah, I think they're very aware of just how much money certain individuals with, you know, often lots of power and high-level connections, how much money those people are making from the exploitation of natural resources. And so people are very reluctant to speak. You know, even NGOs, international NGOs that work in this space, because they don't want to lose their relationship with the government. And the government is, unfortunately, incredibly sensitive to criticism or scrutiny of their management of natural resources.
Right. I think a major turning point occurred around mid-last year when 10 Mother Nature kids were arrested and jailed for 6 to 8 years. The Cambodians I know, and I've known many over the years, they were absolutely flabbergasted because their reports stemmed from sewage leaks into the Mekong River, and they were pursued and harassed, and the jail term, 6 to 8 years, was extraordinary. And I think that sent a direct message to Cambodians about what the government is all about and what not to say and what not to do.
Yeah, that one was a bleak one. I think a lot of Cambodians that I knew were shocked. You know, it was just, no one expected them to get sentences that harsh. And, and you're right, I mean, they are literally young kids who happen to care about the environment and to point out where things are going wrong. You know, it wasn't even particularly inflammatory the way that they did it. Peaceful marches and demonstrations, nothing that really incited violence or, you know, could be seen as defamatory, I don't think.
They weren't trying to oust the government.
I mean, yeah, it was pretty devastating.
What they were protesting about and what they were highlighting were very simple, obvious breaches of environmental codes. And what they were saying is, we'd like this cleaned up. And how that can be construed as a crime that warranted jail terms of 6 to 8 years, including a lèse majeste charge, which was thrown in there. But yeah, a very stern, strong message from the government.
Yeah, I think the Mother Nature case and the sentencing, including kids, it reflects the sort of insecurity of the new administration. They, realistically, the activists were calling for very basic provision of government services, wastewater management. You know, it's not, they're not asking for the earth. The whole context of what's been happening in Cambodia in the last few years, you know, I mean, the forced comes to mind as, you know, a very arbitrary decision to just silence probably the, you know, the most effective independent media outlet that the country's had since, you know, the Daily and the Post.
It is a very difficult situation. Also, the Cambodian economy is not in great shape, as we all know. The Chinese are not coming back and showering the government with money. There's been speculation that they would like to at least attempt to get back into the better books with Western governments, which they eschewed 8 years ago as the Chinese were coming in. How much damage are these sorts of headlines, the jailings of Mother Nature, your own expulsion from Cambodia, how badly is that impacting on the government and its ability to talk to investors and foreign governments around the world?
I mean, I think it depends on the type of investors that they're looking for, but I think, yeah, it doesn't reflect well at all. Yeah, I think it doesn't scream confidence if you are, if as a government you are opposed to peacefully advocating for slight improvements in governance. But yeah, I think the absolute bulldozing of civil society, it is going to spook any investors that have any shred of ethics, really. So you're going to be left with, you know, the more unscrupulous ones. But even then, you know, I think investors are going to want stability and predictability. And if at the moment the only thing you can really expect and predict with a degree of accuracy is more repression in Cambodia.
Right, and that's not going to look well with Donald Trump, who's back, as we all know. And I don't think anybody would believe that Donald Trump cares very much about Cambodia or these smaller Southeast Asian countries. But when they're looking at shutting down USAID and the money that comes into these countries through foreign aid, it's a bit like this style of repression is just giving the Americans the opportunity to cut countries like Cambodia altogether.
I think we can tell from Trump's first term that he's not really going to give a shit about journalists or environmental activists, particularly not in Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
But Marco Rubio, as Secretary of State, I think he could be an interesting one to watch. You know, he had previously sponsored legislation aimed at holding Cambodia accountable for its recent democratic backsliding. Whether or not he will have the capacity or the space to kind of operate on any of that, I don't know. But I think, you know, we can see with the US funding cuts and the, you know, the sort of attempts to dismantle USAID, that's already having a pretty devastating impact on Cambodian civil society, on conservation efforts. Yeah, and that's happening across Southeast Asia, where the US has been the biggest player on that for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And there's always the prospect that Trump will unilaterally impose tariffs on all exports coming out of Southeast Asia, and that could include the Cambodian garment industry. And very difficult to survive those sorts of financial constraints.
Yeah, especially when the Cambodian economy is already struggling. You know, it's never really managed to pull itself back up to pre-pandemic levels. And yep. I think the fact that Cambodia has become so closely drawn in to China's orbit, I think that probably leaves them a little bit more open and a little bit more vulnerable to, you know, Trump's anti-China rhetoric and the sort of anti-China policies that he's putting in place. So I think that's something they probably are aware of in the Cambodian government.
Yeah, indeed. I was speaking to a few other regional analysts, and I did ask them, a lot of Chinese manufacturers have been moving their factories around the region, garments into Cambodia to evade these types of tariffs. And the White House is certainly aware of that. And given the rule by decree and how they're handling things at the moment, you've got to wonder whether or not that sort of strategy is going to work, because Trump seems quite capable of just saying, you know something, we're just going to put 100% on anything produced by any Chinese manufacturer anywhere, whether it's Cambodia or Bangladesh or Myanmar.
That's it. And I think the fact that Cambodia continues to draw negative headlines, you know, not just, you know, my situation,
sure,
or even that of, you know, Mek Dorar and other journalists.
Yep.
But I mean, the continued failure to tackle and root out the scam compounds.
Yep.
Where, you know, that's sucking millions, if not billions, of dollars from victims around the world, including the US. And so I think the Cambodian government is, they possibly are on Trump's radar for some sort of retaliation. At the rate that Cambodia is going, I don't think anyone would particularly oppose that,
right,
aside from the Cambodians.
They were put on the radar by Biden's administration, and people have been sanctioned, as in Cambodian businessmen. But I don't think the Cambodians could have possibly imagined what sort of retaliation could come out of this. They've been screamed at before by the Europeans and other Western countries, sanctions imposed, import-export benefits taken away. But the idea that their foreign funding could just be cut, or that 100% tariffs could be just thrown on their exports has never really entered their consciousness, I don't think, but it's kind of on the horizon now, and all Trump has to do is take forward what the Biden administration had already imposed when it comes down to human trafficking, scam compounds, the reduction of civil space and democratic standards. It's just not a great look at the moment.
I think that's partly the reason that Cambodia, you know, the new administration in particular, seem to be so sensitive about following them respond, you know, with a sort of knee-jerk comment to local news, news reports. But increasingly, in the last 6 months, 9 months, we've seen the government really going after foreign publications, you know, like Reuters, when they did that report on the Funan Techo Canal. Seeing opposites from within the government trying to kind of regain control of the narrative, and I think that's perhaps part due to the shifting geopolitical situation that's leaving them very exposed as a, you know, a China ally, but with not much to defend itself against the Trump administration.
Yeah, indeed. Just quickly, your specialty in Cambodia for 5 years was the environment. How do you sum up Cambodia and its attitude to the environment in the current context?
I think it's an absolute tragedy what's playing out in Cambodia with regards to the environment. We've seen continuation of all of the absolute worst characteristics of governance that have sadly become emblematic in Cambodia. You know, we've got one of the highest rates of primary forests being lost, you know, one of the highest rates of tropical deforestation in the world. You've got an incredible amount of suffering being heaped onto ordinary Cambodians as a result of these disastrous economic land concessions, which have just absolutely leveled forests and turned them into agricultural plantations, very rarely delivered economically. You've got all of these dams affecting rivers, sand mining. It's endless. You know, whichever direction you look in on the environment, it is just catastrophe after catastrophe. And this pivot to Red Plus, you know, this sort of this hope that I think the Cambodian government has placed in its ability to sell carbon credits, I think it should be a major concern. I would encourage more journalists be scrutinizing how these projects are functioning and whether they are actually delivering on their promises to protect the environment and where all that money is going, because the government is making millions of dollars, yet some of these projects they're a little dubious.
I covered Red Plus for quite a few years out of Borneo, this is going back about 15 years, and the idea is basically you securitize your rainforest, your pristine jungles, and that enables you to access funding to ensure their protection, which are like basically listed on a carbon market the same way a stock is listed on a share market. But you can't securitize and raise money on a rainforest that you're chopping down because there's no asset.
Yeah, I mean, that is by very definition the exact opposite of what you're supposed to be doing. So when the government signs off on these massive hydropower dams, that you need to clear a lot of forest to build the reservoir to store the water, and they're doing that inside Red Plus projects, which, you know, is a complete contradiction of what the Red scheme is supposed to deliver on. And then on top of that, you've got very politically connected, powerful elites using these hydropower dams as covers to run illegal logging operations. So it's not even just the planned reservoir area that you're losing in terms of forest, but it's just a completely anarchic path of destruction being cut out there.
Right. Jerry Flynn, it's been a wonderful chat, and good luck with what's next. And what is next? What are you planning to do?
Well, I mean, I might not be able to get back into Cambodia, but I'm not quite done with it yet. Got plenty more stories to work on, and so I'll be hopefully sticking around the region and, you know, obviously broadening my scope beyond just Cambodia. But, yeah, hopefully you'll still be hearing from me.
Well, good luck to you. And Jerry Flynn, thanks very much.
Thank you very kindly. All the best to you.